On November 18th, American Opera Projects, AOP, First Chance, and the Hudson Area Library will present a stage reading of Act Two of the new opera, A Thousand Splendid Suns, by composer Sheila Silver and librettist Stephen Katsakos. A Thousand Splendid Suns is scheduled for a world premiere by the Seattle Opera in 2020, and a workshop performance of Act One was presented in New York last year at Trinity Church. The performance of Act Two at the Hudson Area Library in Hudson will include an introduction before the action of the act begins. Based on the international best-selling novel by Khaled Hosseini and set in Afghanistan from the mid-1970s to the present era, A Thousand Splendid Suns is a universal story of love, passion, sacrifice, and spiritual transcendence. We are joined now by the composer, Sheila Silver. She joins us in the studio, and librettist Stephen Katsakos joins us via telephone. Good morning to you both. Thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
A great pleasure. Thank you very much, Stephen. Good to have you on the telephone. So let us begin with you, Sheila, of how this all got started.
Well, I had read the book and was very moved by the story of these two women. They are heroines. They happen to be Muslim heroines. And I wanted to tell their story. And when you look for a story for opera, I, as a composer, I'm always looking for a story for opera. And I thought about this particular story for at least 2 years before I tried to get the rights from Khaled Hosseini. And you always want something that has a reason to be sung.
Right.
Opera is larger than life, and it cries out to be sung. So it's not a play, and it's not a movie, and it doesn't have to be as realistic as a movie, and it can't have as many words as a play, but it has to be sung. And I thought that this was larger than life and totally operatic.
So at what point do you and Stephen become partners in this?
I would say that Stephen was my partner before we ever started on this. So therefore, I said to Stephen, you know, I read this incredible book, but it's too complicated. We could never do it. And then a year later, I said, I read this incredible book, and now you need to read it because I think we could do it. Steve, you want to elaborate?
Sure, Sheila. Well, this is the third project we've worked on together. So Sheila and I have learned how to collaborate, essentially. And I read the book, and I think I read it in two settings, and I was really, really moved by it. And it definitely is a story that is operatic in terms of its sensibility and tone. The issue is, it is sweeping. It has a huge amount of politics that are very difficult to understand. And it also has characters that are from a different culture. And we tend, and certainly American audiences, to see things through ethnocentric eyes. So the drill was to find a way to consolidate and condense this particular story in a way that would be suitable for the stagecraft and the opera stage. And Sheila and I started to work on this. We worked on an outline for, I think, well over a year. We would meet weekly, and I was living in the Hudson Valley before I moved to Key West, and we would meet in Red Hook or Rhinebeck somewhere, and we would kind of bring our laptops and kind of pound out a act by act, scene by scene, and cross that out and start again. And then about a year later, we came up with what we thought was a good outline of the story itself, and then we started the writing, or at least I started the writing.
Talk a little bit, if you will, about the process of working with Khaled Hosseini and what he wanted. And I assume when you give the rights, he has certain things that he wants in, and other things that not demands exactly, but there's certainly things that he cares about.
Steve, you think I should take that one?
Yeah, sure, Sheila.
I will, because actually. He told me when I met him, and I met him for lunch after he'd already agreed to give us the rights. And he said he doesn't know much about opera, and he really didn't want to participate. He's busy writing other books, and he wasn't going to participate creatively in this. He made only two requirements of me.
Okay.
He said, if they're supposed to be wearing burkas, if they would have been wearing burkas in the scene, in the book, they need to be wearing burkas on stage. And I said, okay. I hadn't thought about it, but it made sense. And the other thing he said, are you going to quote the Quran? And I said, well, I don't really know. He said, well, I require that if you're going to quote anything from the Quran, you do so with respect and reverence. And I said, absolutely, of course. And those were the only two requirements. And he's going to come to the premiere.
That's great. So, I mean, that makes it a little, with that kind of freedom, I assume it makes it easier, yes?
Well, actually, Joe, so I'm going to just sort of riff off what Sheila said. So to ask the adapter, the librettist, to set everything in which women have to wear burqas on a stage is very challenging because these women wear the full burqa. In other words, they're covered completely, including their faces. They have a little mesh for their eyes only. That would be quite difficult for singers on a stage and also for audience members to make distinctions between the various characters. So the challenge for me was basically to find a way to set the entire opera indoors. And I think that we've come up with a plan to do so, so that the majority of the opera takes place in situations or in places where our women do not need to be covered the entire time.
And
there is one very, very powerful moment in the second act in which we bring them all outdoors, and we're hoping that when that happens, it will be an incredibly powerful moment, not only for stagecraft, but an important cultural moment to see on the stage itself. So.
I would add that, you know, the opera covers a long span of time, and in the beginning, while many women wore burqas, many women wore Western dress, too. It was probably back in the 60s and 70s, and the women would have been dressed in blue jeans and maybe no headscarves at all. So we have a market scene early on where there's a little more liberty and we don't have to have burqas. But as the Taliban take over, the burqas become prevalent and, in fact, de rigueur. Women cannot go outside without one.
Stephen, in we've been talking about some of the challenges, but what has the freedom been in telling the story and that artistic really benefit of being able to bring this to the stage?
Sure. Well, first of all, the book is written in a very unique style. It's definitely written in a linear fashion, and it's in the third person, but he has divided it into three different sections, and the sort of the tone and the pacing is very different for each of those sections. He presents a little bit of the story of Mariam, who is the first heroine and the protagonist, and it's basically her journey. She has the arc that we follow. And then about 200 pages later, it introduces Lila, who is a girl who is 14 years old, essentially, when we meet her. She's more of a fully formed person. However, the actual plot, the major plot of the book and of the opera doesn't really happen until the two women are in the same house together because they become the wives of the same man. So telling the backstories, the exposition of both of these women gave me a lot of freedom to kind of pick and choose what we could do. And especially in a book where it might just take two sentences or three to describe something, on the stage it takes a little longer. So what Sheila and I decided to do, and it's a very operatic convention, is we have a lot of simultaneous things happening. We're in two different locations at the same time, and the audiences are smart enough to see the what happens back and forth between the two households, and the score itself contains enough, let's say, like an undertone or sort of enough in the orchestration, so that we realize that we're in the same moment musically, but we're in two different locations, and that's also an economical way to get the story across.
Sheila, talk about as you say, you've worked on several projects together. So talk about that working relationship and how that goes.
Well, Steve is fabulous to work with, and he knows how to handle me, I think, with kid gloves. And so basically, I play every single scene for him. We talk about the scene before I write it, then I write it, then we play about it. And he usually is, if he has a criticism, he's usually right. And I argue with him, and sometimes I win and sometimes he wins. But I listen, because he's very careful with his criticism, I listen very carefully when he criticizes, and it's usually to make it better. And so we have a great trust in one another and a great respect for one another, and that goes a long ways towards making it a very harmonious collaboration. I love working with Steve.
Oh, thank you, Sheila. But also, speaking of harmonious, Joy, I will tell you that very often audiences, they're just a little afraid of opera, especially contemporary opera. This opera in particular has a very, very unique sound to it, but it is completely accessible. It will land on the ear beautifully. I mean, people that have heard Sheila's music are just really blown away by its complexity and its tonality and its ability to integrate the music. And Sheila, I'm going to bounce this back to you, but the music of the Hindustani, which is the music of Afghanistan out of Northwest India, that Sheila studied, and she has really found a way to integrate this exotic sound with the sounds of music on the Western ear. Sheila, if you want to talk a little bit about your adventure in India.
Well, let's just say that I felt that in order to write an opera that took place in Afghanistan, I needed to go a little bit further than my Western roots. And the music of Afghanistan is what we would call Hindustani music, North Indian classical music. It's the music of Afghanistan, of Pakistan, of North India. It's all pre-related. And I went to India and studied with a guru for 6 months and then continued to study with him via Skype. And basically, I've been studying Hindustani music now for 3 or 4 years. And I have incorporated aspects into my Western voice. And it's not something that someone's going to say, oh, if you know Hindustani music, then you might recognize how I'm using ragas and rhythms. If you don't know it, it won't matter, because it's really about the color and the sound world. It's not about anything literal. I'm a Western composer. I'm writing for Western instruments. But I am incorporating, I'm being inspired by a Hindustani color.
We are just about out of time, but I do want to talk about, just real quickly, of what people can expect from the event at the Hudson Area Library, of how this is staged, so Act Two, and so why that specifically, and how will that be set up for the evening?
Well, for one thing, we've already workshopped twice Act One, so we don't need to workshop that.
Yep.
So, yes, it's a problem always when you're saying, here's Act Two, and they don't know what Act One sounds like. So for that, we are offering, for anybody who wants to, a screening of the video of Act One a couple of nights before, on the Thursday night, November 8th.
Okay.
Or November 9th. I think it's November 9th.
Okay.
And anybody, it's at 6 p.m., and anybody can come to the library, and we're going to have screen the first act and talk about that if anybody wants to talk about it. But also, it's semi-stage. It's not, there's no elaborate costumes. We hope that the singers will be off book. They're supposed to be off book, but it's all new music, and they're going to have a week and a half to learn it all. So not even a week and a half, a week. So it's very, very intense, and we have a small ensemble, which includes violin, viola, cello, bansuri, which is a bamboo flute, played by Steve Gorn, who actually lives in the Woodstock area. And we're having tabla, which is the Indian Hindustani drums. So there's a little bit of exotica right there in the band, what I call the band, and piano. So program should last about an hour and a half max. We're going to give 10 minutes of Act One, and then we're going to go into Act Two, and we will introduce each of the acts and tell the people what happened in Act One and so forth.
Well, that's terrific. It's a beautiful evening that is planned. AOP First Chance and the Hudson Area Library will present a stage reading of Act Two of the new opera, A Thousand Splendid Suns, in Hudson on November 18th. For more information on that event and the events prior to that, you can go to the HudsonAreaLibrary.org, HudsonAreaLibrary.org. That link will be posted along with this interview at WAMC.org/roundtable. Stephen, Sheila, thank you so much for being with us. Best of luck on the beautiful work, and I appreciate you sharing it with us this morning.
Thank you so much for having us.
A great pleasure.
Thanks,
you.
Joe. Appreciate it.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.